IVM.
Hello, folks. Welcome to The Last Brand Standing, presented by Bank of Baroda. It's a podcast where we discuss some of the most iconic brand rivalries from the Indian marketplace. On this episode, we talk about Manyavar and Raymond. Both of them are well-known brands in the Indian clothing space. Ambi, what do you have for us? What's this about? Tell us.
This is a very, very different kind of battle. You know, in fact, probably one of the players who was being battled was not even aware that they were being battled. Okay, so as we discuss this, we will take the listeners to the very, very interesting dynamics of this battle.
Sounds good, Ambi. And folks, you're going to talk about weddings. You're going to talk about clothes. You're going to talk about style and a lot of other stuff. This is a really cool one that you guys want to hear. So let's get started. Introduce our players. Okay, so here's the first one. Introducing Raymond. Okay, our first player is Raymond, a giant in the field of men's clothes, okay, which until the era of ready-made and ready-to-wear garments, which we call fabric, you know, cases where you buy the cloth and give it to the tailor. Any of you actually remember that? That's how things worked at one point of time. In fact, even today, a few of us, you know, probably get cloth and then would just love for it to be tailor-made for your own fitting. But of course, the majority today, you just buy a shirt, buy a trouser from a store, go and buy it, just wear it. That's it, you know. But back then, I'm talking 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, when ready-made was still not that popular, you would typically go to a neighborhood store, buy fabric, suiting, shirting, as they were called, and then give it to your neighborhood tailor. Your tailor would then aapka maap leta wo, fit in your chest, this, that, like, and then make a shirt, make a trouser, whatever it is. Raymond's history goes back pre-independence, all the way somewhere to the 1940s. From then all the way to 70s, 80s, 90s, it established itself into a major men's fabric and suitings brand. There were three things that Raymond did really well over, you know, the last 40, 50 years, and to some extent, it does well even today. So first, it pioneered the concept of a company-authorized wholesale showroom in fabrics, and Ambi will explain what exactly that is and how that was so unique. Second, it fought off competition from giants like Reliance's Vimal and Grasim's Gwalior. Remember only Vimal? Yeah. So Raymond actually took them on and won that back in the 80s. And finally, the game changer. Remember when the transition happened from tailor-made to ready-made? It's a huge transition. Okay. And it's not an easy one for a lot of the cloth makers back then. Raymond prepared for it. Of course, not all of the attempts were successful, but some attempts were, like the Park Avenue brand, which got a massive boost thanks to Raymond's huge network. How big was this network? So back in the 2000s, okay, Raymond had more than 300 stores across more than 100 cities in India. That's a huge network. And to take us through this entire, you know, how this process happened and how these three things, you know, how Raymond's strengths panned out over the last, since they were formed, let's get into what makes Raymond such a great brand even today. While in 2005, I was definitely wearing Raymond suit. And a Raymond suit, of course, was and still is a big deal. Even in office back then, 2000s, a Raymond suit was a Raymond suit. Ambi, over to you. Take it away. What is really so special about Raymond?
Hey, Raymond, Anupam, Raymond is truly a fabulous Indian brand. In fact, it was named after one of the partners of the company, and then he's no longer, you know, actually was not even involved with the company, and it was named after him, this guy called Raymond. I stitched my first suit probably in 1978 or so when I was getting ready for my campus interviews. Interestingly, I never wore the suit because I got a job in an ad agency, and, you know, wearing a suit in an ad agency, of course, doesn't go well with the territory. But, you know, interestingly, the first brand which I started working on, one of the first brands I started working in 1979 in the agency I joined, Rediffusion Advertising, was a brand called Caliber. Anupam, you remember this brand, Caliber?
Very vaguely, clearly, but yeah, I mean, it does ring a bell. Oh. Caliber, yeah.
Before your time, it's part of, you know, it was part of Calico Mills. Calico Mills at that time was a very, very, very successful textile mill. They used to make fabulous saris. And so they wanted to get into the suiting segment, and they had a brand called Caliber, and they wanted an agency to do a crackling campaign on Caliber. And that's where I got involved and I started working on it. That's when I first started studying brand Raymond and what makes Raymond tick. And you know, in advertising, Raymond had a unique position. When I started working in 1979, Raymond already had a huge lead over the other brands in terms of its image leadership, right? There was an advertising legend called Frank Simois, who had an agency called Frank Simois Advertising. He created the pioneering campaign for Raymond. And I still remember the tagline used to be "Guide to the well-dressed male." I mean, look at it. Guide to the well-dressed male, Raymond, which means if you want to be a well-dressed male, you better be in a Raymond. And I still remember one of the ads, very different. You know, they never, you know, Raymond ads were always very creative. They never used to show this hunk standing in a suit and posing in front of a car. No, it was very subtle. I remember one, which was just the back of a man wearing a suit and a little bit of a shirt showing over the collar, right? And the line said, "A new kind of an executive statement," right? Raymond. So it was that kind of subtle, fabulous advertising. And remember, Raymond that time was not a giant of a company that we know it is today. You know, there were so many suiting brands which were, you know, actually from large companies. Like, you know, Raymond faced huge competition from Bimal, which is from Reliance. Now, Bimal really massified suiting. They opened showrooms. They conducted, you know, fashion shows in their showrooms. They brought glamour. They had film. They had cricketers like Ravi Shastri and Vivian Richards modeling for them. On the other side, there was the Birla brand, you know, Gwalior, which had the Nawab Patowdi modeling for them. And then you had Dinesh, which had Sunil Gavaskar, you know, in fact, saying, "I'm Sunil Dinesh Gavaskar." And then there was Digjam, which had Shekhar Kapoor. And I can go on and on and on. And Raymond never used a celebrity. I don't think they still have ever used a celebrity in their advertising. Interestingly, when the whole fabric industry was getting battled by Powerloom, Raymond did something very visionary. They actually invested in modernizing their plants in the 90s and the 80s, and their product quality dramatically improved. They started making polyester wool suitings, pure wool suitings, phenomenally good quality products. And the other innovative thing they did was they had one showroom, I think, in 1959. But in 1980s, they set up the flagship store at Warden Road, which has been in the news for all the wrong reasons for the last few years. A Warden Road store was set up in 1980. And that kind of gave them the courage that, you know, the way the fabric business operates is that mills give the retailers a huge margin. It's anything between 40 to 50% margin. And you're really at the beck and call of the big retailers. And in fact, some of the textile mills even had wholesalers who came and bought several thans, you know, what they call those rolls of cloth, thans. Mm. So Raymond, in 1980s, declared independence from them. They set up their own first flagship store. After tasting success, they started rolling out these flagship kind of stores on a franchisee model across the country. And they have continued on this journey. And today, Anupam, any idea how many franchisee exclusive stores do they have across the country?
I have no idea. I have no idea at all, in fact, because I don't think that I have been to one in a while. What's it like, Ambe?
1,200 stores. I'm told they have 1,200 stores across the country. And these are not only in tier one cities, they have tier two, even in tier three cities. And they've done a brilliant job of building this network. And all these retail exclusive shops also have telling opportunity there. And interestingly, their Park Avenue brand started doing well. So they have Park Avenue ready-made shirts, ready-made suits, ready-made jackets, all of them available in these stores. And the franchisee makes money selling fabric and they control this. What they've done brilliantly is they ensure that the franchisee doesn't discount the price of the suiting. So the suiting is sold at a fixed price. They don't play around with the price. And the franchisee makes money on tailoring. So brilliantly done. I think their retail strategy has been absolutely brilliant. A lot of companies have tried replicating. In fact, Vimal tried replicating it. And I think Arvind tried replicating it. A lot of people have tried replicating it. But no one has really succeeded the way they have. The other very, very sensible, and I'm saying it, you know, so obviously, you know why I'm saying it, is that they have consciously gone about building a brand called Raymond. You know, while they have had a lot of new product introductions like Trovine and this and that, it was always the Raymond brand. So the initial advertising was by Frank Simoes, which was Guide to the Well-Dressed Male. And then in the 90s, they started working with a young agency called Nexus Equity, set up by my friend Rajiv Agarwal, Arun Kale, and Rajan Nair. And they came with a breakthrough campaign, The Complete Man. And while all the suiting manufacturers are showing hunks with very good-looking women, etc., these guys went completely different. They started showing the human side of an executive. I still remember there was an ad which a man, I think, dressed, you know, he's carrying his jacket on his shoulder, but he's walking through forest along with his kid. They're walking down and you have this Crosby, Stills and Nash track playing in the background, you know, teach your children.
I remember that. That was awesome. I remember that. Yeah, go on. Sorry. Got me into a bit of nostalgia there.
No, but you know, I mean, Anupam, that was a kind of advertising which was way ahead of its time. This is, I think, 98 or 99 or something like that. I mean, I think in many ways, Raymond got everything right from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s, right? They had a great range of products. They were premium priced. They had their own exclusive showrooms. They had a portfolio of brands. You know, they had Raymond, they had Park Avenue, and then 10 years ago, they went and bought Color Plus. So they had a whole range of brands. They had fabulous product quality. They were not in the clutches of the wholesale and the retail trade. And they had everything perfectly planned. Indians were getting into this whole suit culture. A lot of white-collar jobs are coming up and people were buying their blue jacket to wear to meetings. People are getting ready to wear their suits. And very interestingly, I did not know that, a large part of the Raymond sales was connected to one event in everyone's life.
What was the event?
Wedding, yeah, wedding. I remember I was having lunch with this friend of mine who was a very senior executive in Raymond. He was telling me that this year's sale is not all that great, but next year we expect sales to bounce back. So I said, what's wrong with this year and what is so great about next year? He said, no, this year is a leap year. So I said, what has leap year got to do with your sale?
Huh.
So he said, look, you know, a lot of Christian communities don't get married in a leap year. They say it's bad luck to get married during a leap year.
Okay, I didn't know that.
But, you know, but very important thing is close to 30% probably of their sale came from suiting related purchases. You know, the bridegroom, the bride's father, the bride's, you know, probably sister, brother. And then, of course, the bridegroom's parents and a whole lot of people. So, in fact, very often for a wedding, 20, 30 suits get stitched. So, wedding was a big part of their business. Wedding business was very, very big for them. So, in a sense, they should have anticipated something which our next player, whom we are going to talk about, spotted. Yeah. So I mean, I'm all full of admiration for Raymond. They fought really big, tough competitors, Reliance and Birla and all these people. And they managed to actually build. And today, if you ask people, people probably think, you know, Raymond is a global brand. It's not, right? Yeah. It's an Indian brand. It may sound very global, but it's a very, very Indian brand. And it's a fabulous quality. And I think they're exporting their products in many, many parts of the world. And it's a fabulous brand, but they did not see this coming.
I think Raymond itself deserves its probably a longer section. Whenever, you know, whether it was my office trousers or my office suits, Raymond was it. I mean, it was and still is a premium brand. But like Ambi said, they didn't anticipate the new player coming. And we're going to talk about the new player on the other side of the break, Manyavar. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to this episode. In the first part, we spoke about Raymond's and how on three parameters, it did seriously, seriously well and built a lot of competitive advantages around them. Number one, innovation. It took out a lot of innovative cloth material like Trovine, Terul, you know, mixing blends of polyester and woolen and did really well. Number two, maintaining a very premium kind of brand, which was supported by, number three, its biggest edge, advertising. It was and still is a huge brand to contend with in the men's space. But it didn't anticipate the rise of this small player in the late 1990s and in the turn of the century, Manyavar. Now, all this while we've been focusing on the broader men's clothing part, okay, shirts, trousers, suits, etc., that are everyday wear, okay? And probably a lot of us also wear suits for special occasions, okay, birthdays, anniversaries, parties, this, that, whatever it is. But we've not spoken about ethnic wear, okay? Because ethnic wear is a segment that was, probably still is, dominated by regional smaller players. So India is a huge diverse country. And to think that everybody wears a shirt and a pant and a trouser and a suit and a tie and all that is a little bit, you know, probably generalizing a lot. But because of our size and our diversity, ethnic wear actually differs from region to region. What you wear in the south for a wedding might not be the same as what you wear in the north for a wedding. And there are so many festive occasions in India. Most of them have their own set of clothes. Okay. And then, of course, there is the, okay, pardon the cliche out here, guys. A big fat Indian wedding. And that is where our second player enters, Manyavar, the brand. What a story, man. Hey, so Manyavar began its journey in 1999 by its founder, Ravi Modi, in Calcutta, who was all of just 22 years old. So in an interview with Forbes, Ravi said, "I saw it like an opportunity of a lifetime, not only to build a business, but also to change men's fashion in the country." He did exactly that. Started with just 10,000 rupees of capital and began selling his brand of wedding wear across stores like Pantaloons. Guess what? It worked. In 10 years, that is just a decade, through the 2000s, Manyavar crossed 100 stores. By 2013, it had reached 300 stores across 100 cities. To get an idea of Manyavar's ambitions, okay, get this. Its 200th store was a 21,000 square feet store in Delhi's Karol Bagh. Okay? The best part is how Manyavar does things very differently. It's stuff you wouldn't really expect from a clothing brand. For example, and as per that Forbes article, it is reportedly the only brand in the country that does not have an end-of-season sale. It seems Manyavar donates or destroys old stock. And finally, it's massive marketing. Look at the people it employs. From Bollywood, cricketers, Virat Kohli, Anushka Sharma, Ranveer Singh, Karthik Aryan, Amitabh Bachchan. And to explain the Manyavar phenomenon, okay, over to Ambi. Ambi, walk us through. How did these guys come up here? I mean, what is okay. So fascinating. Go on.
Yeah, so, you know, I was talking about the lunch which I had with my friend many years ago. He was the guy who pointed me out to this Manyavar phenomenon, which was just coming at that time. It was, I think, 2008 or 9 or something like that. Now, let me now reel out some names, okay? Hum Aapke Hai Kaun, 1994.
Yes.
Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge, 1995. Dil To Pagal Hai, 1998. Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gum, 2001. Mohabbate, 2000. Rab Ne Bana Di Jodi, 2008. Band Baja Bharat, 2010. What do all these movies have? I think what happened in the late 90s and the 2000s is the big fat Indian wedding started becoming fatter, started becoming bigger. And I call this the Punjabification of the Indian wedding. Wow. It's a big contribution made by Messrs. Aditya Chopra and Karan Johar to the both Indian diaspora. You know, interestingly, Dilwale Dulhania was really the first film which started looking at the Indian diaspora. And then, of course, Hum Aapke Hai Kaun is called the longest shadi video, right?
And say, okay, I didn't know that. I had no idea about that. Yeah, go on.
Okay, so as a result, what happened was that Indian weddings were becoming huge affairs. You know, even in Kerala, where a wedding is supposed to last about anything between 15 to 20 minutes, you started having 3 events and 4 events and stuff like that. And so, you know, something was happening with the Indian wedding. There were more occasions being created. There was Sangeet, there was this, there was that, all those things happening. And in a sense, you know, women's wear for weddings kept evolving. But men's wear were kind of stuck in the same old kind of suit. So you can't possibly wear a blue suit for the Sangeet and a green suit for the Shadi and an orange suit for the wedding. You know, that doesn't work well. And designer wear was really very, very small and niche. And so what do you do? if you want to do a three-event, you know, wedding celebration, what do? You can't keep buying three different colored silk kurtas from Cottage Industries Emporium or from Fab India. And that's where Manyavar saw the, what he calls, Ravi Modi calls the 80,000 crore opportunity. And he stepped in. And as you know, Manyavar is a relatively young brand. It actually opened its own store only in 2008. And interestingly, they borrowed a leaf from the Raymond playbook, because they went, Anupam, like you said, they went the same way. They started opening their own retail stores. And like you said, they did a great job of making sure, this is what an old friend told me, that they made sure the franchisee never got ended up with dead stock. They had a great system of rotating the stock. And like you said, they never have a sale. So if something doesn't sell, they tear it or they give it away for charity. Amazing. Amazing vision from a very, very young entrepreneur, right? And mind you, they then started investing in advertising. And I think the year 2018, 2019, they spent something like 67 crores on advertising. That's like unheard of, right? Out of sale of probably 500, 600, 700 crores, they're spending 10% on advertising. And what I find really nice in their own very inane kind of advertising, they first went after dressing up the groom, saying this is the dress in which the groom has to go. Then they slowly tweaked it by saying not only the groom, but the groom's friend also should go dressed in Manyavar. And they had a very nice campaign called Yaar Ki Shaadi. So Yaar Ki Shaadi, so sab log uspe jana chahiye kind of stuff.
Correct.
And right, and in the last 2 years, they're tweaking it even further and they're taking on the anti-suit platform. And they have this campaign called Tayar Hoke Aaiye. And there's this, I think, ad where this elderly gentleman is dressed in a suit. And I think Ranveer Singh goes to him and says, Mera Naukri ka application. And the guy says, Haan. And then he catches him again, Sir, Mera Naukri ka application. And finally, the old man says, Yaar, main shaadi ke liye aaya hoon. Hey, Naukri ka application, kya baat kar rahe ho? Ranveer says, Sir, aap shaadi ke liye aaye ho, lekin suit pehen ke aaye ho. Maine socha aap office ke liye aaye. So, shaadi attend karna hai, toh tayar hoke aaiye.
This was there in the movies. Of course, now with all the multiplexes shut, I really miss them, by the way. I remember last couple of years, whenever we used to go to the movies, and this ad would always come. It was so, they made it so well. They just made it so well. That whole thing about shaadi hai, tayar hoke aaiye. I mean, it's like, it's just that nice edge of, it's not very condescending or pitted, I think it just sounded so cool, that okay, listen, this is an occasion, you should dress up, and how did they do that? I mean, so did they have an ad agency? I mean, how did they think of this thing? What's the story out there? Like,
I think in marketing parlance, we talk of, anti-cola position, which 7-Up took many years ago, saying, go anti-cola. So this is classical anti-cola kind of a platform, saying anti-suit. So I'm saying, go anti-suit and therefore, tayar hoke aaiye.
Are you talking about Nominous Boring? I kind of somehow remember Sprite. Was it Sprite or was it 7-Up? I don't remember. Nominous Boring kind of an ad.
But original campaign, I think, for which, Al Rees and Jack Trout write about in their classical article on positioning, written in 1978 or so, in Ad Age, the case they talk about is uncola positioning of 7-Up, right?
Wow.
7-Up actually went on uncola. So here, Manyavar, in our own country, took on this anti-suit positioning, and they've done a fabulous job of building that brand. And I'm told, I was talking to someone who understands the business. He said, look, the whole ethos of ethnic wear is different. And Manyavar and Anupam, you and I may feel it's a little too bright and too in your face and too colorful, etc.
But not me at all. I just love all of their stuff. And seriously, I mean, if I was getting married today, I would definitely walk into the store and have a look at what they have. Of course, Mera Zamana Alag Tha, I belong to a totally different generation. I got married in 2005. But listen, it's a wedding, man. Just be as bright, as blingy as possible. I am not, you know, there are times to be minimalistic and there are times to, you know, just to be loud. I think a mix of both is needed in life.
Yeah, so I still find their design a little too in your face for my liking. But apparently that's what, like you said very rightly, that's what works. That's, you know, so they understood. They had their, you know, finger on the pulse of the upper middle class Indian consumer who wanted that blingness, that brightness. They got in, you know, right, you know, Anupam, the company got valued at some 4,000 crores in 2017. And they got, you know, Kedara Capital invested 400 crores for a 10% of the company. And I was told this year, they're going to be what, 1920? They're like 1,200 crores in terms of top line and fairly high profits, right? Anything in the region of 300 crores or so. It's an amazing success. And look at it. It's a bit like there is no one else. It's a Manyavar and everyone else is a pygmy, right? There are so many small brands, but you know, no one is of their size. And to be fair, they took a lot of play from the Raymond playbook, focusing on the quality, focusing on design, inventory management, avoiding sale, having a tight control on your franchisee stores, not allowing them to discount, and of course, investing continuously on brand building advertising. So they have done everything right. And today, 1,200 crores, right? This 1,200 crores, how much of it went from Raymond? I don't know. How many people would have otherwise bought two suits from Raymond, ended up buying one suit from Raymond and one from Manyavar? Or maybe would have bought five suits from Raymond for all his friends and family, ended up buying nothing from Raymond and five Shadiwala suits from Manyavar. So it may not be a direct head-to-head battle like a Nirma versus Surf, but this is an interesting battle. And I think it's interesting to see what lessons, you know, marketers can learn from this very, very interesting battle. I think hats off to both companies, but, you know, Manyavar has won the last round.
They have. And to get into the exact lessons, we'll get into the aftermath between Manyavar and Raymond on the third and final part of this episode. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And welcome back to this episode. We spoke about, in the first part, we spoke about Raymond, its history, its legacy, and how it built its brand. In the second part, we spoke about Manyavar and how it built its own brand in just what, maybe 10, 15 years, and it's done phenomenally well. In this final part, the aftermath and the lessons. So we saw the rise of Raymond, again, big competitors, large lines. Raymond's used classical marketing really well by hitting all the four P's. And then, well, they got blindsided by Manyavar, who just came and moved an unorganized sector into a branded, organized play. That's ethnic wear, wedding wear, festival wear. It was a little bit late to wake up, but it moved with speed since then. Okay, you look at Raymond's consolidated sales, they were 2,530 crores in FY10. And by FY20, when we checked the website screener, they went up to 6,500 crores. Okay, so 2,530 crores to 6,500 crores in the matter of 10 years. It's a pretty good growth rate. And, you know, maybe Manyavar didn't really affect Raymond that much. But then Manyavar itself had a stellar growth. 10,000 rupees of capital back in the year 1999. And in 2000, like Ambi had said, Kedara Capital got into the firm, took in 10% at some 400 crores. So that's a valuation of about 4,000 crores. And this data is as per an Economic Times article. So obviously Manyavar has also, you know, has also traveled a fairly long journey in a really short period of time when you compare it to Raymond. So Ambi, let's start this final part. What lessons can we learn from this battle? You know, was this really a battle? Did Manyavar win or did Raymond lose? Just let's do the final part now.
Very often when you are doing very well, very successfully in a market, Anupam, you tend to define the market the way you see it. And Raymond, for many, many years, defined the market as men's suitings and shirtings. And they didn't see this whole ethnic revolution happening. This whole, what we talked about, you know, kabhi kushi, kabhi gum, and, you know, hum aapke hai kaun phenomenon happening. And in fact, between 1999 and 2015, Raymond did not even have anything to do with Indian ethnic wear in their showroom. So they understood suitings. They did a great job with suitings. They had made their own shirtings, and they're doing a great job with shirtings. They understood ready-made shirts. They understood ready-made trousers. They understood ready-made suits. But they missed the bus, and they didn't see it. You know, you can't blame them, right? They might have said, look, it's not our market, right? It's not our market. But the mistake you make is it's the same consumer. So therefore, instead of defining the market by products, you need to define the market of what is the share of solution are you providing? Like, if there are, let's say, in the upper income groups in this country, let's say 1 million or let's say whatever number, let's say 1 million shadis are happening every year. What is my share of the shadi market? How many of them are buying from me? And if they're not coming to me, where are they going? Right? So they missed on this dramatically. So the first lesson is, how do you define the market? Do you define it by product, or you define it by what is the share of consumer solution are you providing? That's a big lesson. You know, manufacturers, we normally put things into boxes or products like suiting, shirting, ready-made. Consumers don't do that, right? I mean, for example, currently people are talking of a new, fashion thing emerging after this COVID thing is behind us, that people will start working from home, in which case, what kind of clothes are you going to wear? So that's going to be a new learning for people. So I think the first thing is, how do you define your market? The second is, you need to understand who's going to disrupt your market, right? Is it going to be the usual players? Is it going to be the same Raymond, the Arvind, and the Gwalior? Or is it going to be something completely left of field? In this case, that's what happened, right? A player came from Kolkata. And mind you, there is another player coming up from Ahmedabad.
Huh? Who's that? Which one are you referring to?
Okay. Who provides Prime Minister Modi his jackets?
I have absolutely no idea. Me, tell us.
Okay. It's a brand called Jade Blue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they've got a huge showroom in Ahmedabad, and I'm told they'll probably emerge as another big brand in this ethnic wear kind of category. But look at it this way, when Mr. Modi came and he started wearing those half-sleeve jackets, right? Suddenly, a huge opportunity opened up, right? Everyone, Wills, Zodiac, and even Raymond started offering those, sleeveless jackets, and I went and bought a few, and I love them because I think they're perfect for the Indian weather conditions. So one is that that you've got to be aware that your competition is going to come from anywhere, right? It's easy for you to define the market in terms of suitings and shirtings, but this is a classical, those people who know marketing would have read this article called The Marketing Myopia, which is written by Theodore Levitt in the 1960s in Harvard Business Review, where he said the American railroad industry defined their business as railroad. They didn't define it as transportation. If they defined it as transportation, they'd have understood their competition is not coming from other railroads operators. It's going to come from trucks, which are going to move at a faster pace on the highways which are being built in America. Right? Similarly, here again, Raymond defined it as suitings and shirtings, and then comes this whole new Punjabification of Indian weddings, and comes a brand which says, look, I'm going to take this entirely commoditized market and I'm going to convert a brand out of it. Fortunately for Raymond, they woke up and I think they've done something with their khadi strategy. I love the stuff they sell as khadi. But intrinsically, if you were to ask me, do they have an answer for Manyavar? I don't know. In fact, they could have looked at an acquisition a few years ago, because imagine if you can display that in your 1,100 showrooms, you'll suddenly take a brand from nowhere into a national level. So they still are, I think, wondering whether to buy or to make. And these are opportunities which they have to see. But, intrinsically, I think the big issue is Raymond is a suiting company. They understand the suiting ethos. I'm not sure they still understand the Indian ethnic bling kind of ethos. And when they get it right, I'm sure they will be very, very successful and they'll be able to expand the market further. But it's a big lesson for anyone, any big company which is saying, oh, this guy is not my competition. You never know. You know, in 5 years' time, he may become one-third, one-fourth your size. So you got to keep your eyes out. And I keep calling this lesson number one. Lesson number one in marketing is really understand your customer, understand how the customer is changing, and how your product is relevant or irrelevant in the customer's life. So that's I think, a big lesson for anyone who's listening to this episode of this podcast, Anupam.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, there is the whole thing about whether a company that is so invested and so known, its entire brand is suits and shirts and trousers and material, would the public accept them if they make sherwanis and kurtas and churidars and stuff like that? I think that is something. Do you think that's an experiment worth trying for them? What do you say?
I think it's worth trying because, you know, like I said, there may be a market which is saying, look, I want slightly less level of bling. Therefore, I don't mind paying 50% more, but I want less bling and I want a stylish kind of stuff. You know, I mean, there may be people, and in fact, if you've gone and visited the Raymond showrooms of late, they do have sherwanis. They have very well-designed sherwanis. I don't think they've put enough money power behind it. You know, they've spent a lot of money promoting khadi. Khadi is great. The fabric is fantastic. But I don't think they've done enough in terms of pushing their own Indian ethnic collection. I think Raymond can do a great job with Indian ethnic collection. You know, who says that Indian ethnic clothes can only be, you know, I think there is a market available between, let's say, a Manyavar and a designer like, you know, Sabyasachi or whoever, right? Whoever is doing Indian male ethnic wear. So there is a nice market out there and the market is very big. And a whole generation now can be upgraded from Manyavar to Raymond Indian ethnic wear. I think there's a possibility, one. Second is, of course, you can look at new brand, right? Mm. Like ColorPlus. ColorPlus is a totally new brand, which is sold under the same retail chain, right? You can create a new brand, a totally new brand, and push it very hard. You can give it the support of your top 500 retail outlets so that the brand takes off in terms of distribution. So you can play with, I mean, obviously you need to experiment with different two or three or different approaches on how to handle this. Because, you know, look at it. I mean, in that article, they say that Indian ethnic wear is 80,000 crores and that's huge. And Manyavar is 200 crores.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm going to go to the other side. Okay, I'm going to look at it from Manyavar's perspective. It's just kind of winding up this episode, folks. So just stay with me here. Ambi, there's so many questions, but I'll just try and wrap it up into just one question. How do you go from being a 22-year-old in Calcutta of all the places and take on this massive market? Calcutta is not a small place, no doubt. Calcutta also, I'm sure, has a very large marriage market, so to say. I mean, they've got Marwadis there who are seriously rich. How does it work for such a young guy to think of all this and in what? In 20 years, less than 20 years, build out this entire thing, hitting all the right spots and making it into such a large company. What? Anything here that you think that you can tell a listener, any lessons of how to crack this entire thing? Because he's gone from something that's totally unorganized, small and regional, and he made it national. And I like two things that he did, Ambi. Hear me out. Okay, first, I remember this ad with Virat Kohli that talks about occasion, that he takes the entire thing. He takes Christmas, he takes Eid, he takes Diwali. The entire ethos, you know, he's talking about this festival thing. But that's the first thing. He's going beyond wedding. He's going beyond office and saying that, listen, this is what you wear on these festivals. And in India, you have all of that. So first is that. And the second is, I have to ask, man, what is the deal with so many Bollywood and cricket people? These people don't come cheap. So is the message here that if you want to go big, you have to spend big? Walk us through Manyavar's story in this last part of the show. Come on.
I think Manyavar, you know, understood Indian ethnic wear extremely well. I think Ravi Modi and his wife, Shilpi Modi, has given the brand the ethnic, the designer feel. The other thing in being in Kolkata is a great advantage when you're doing Indian ethnic wear, because the best karigars are available in Kolkata.
Oh,
and they are extremely good with the embroidery work. In fact, I know that some of your top designers who make women designer wear have karigars in Kolkata, because Kolkata has
talking about
the best
women designer wear. Yeah, that's the other thing that that they did that Raymond didn't do with Anushka Sharma. They're actually opening up an entirely new market that Raymond never had, women's wear.
So they opened up. So they come with this advantage of Kolkata, the whole base of karigars there, and they first went for the shadi, and like you said, they've gone from shadi to everyone who's coming to the shadi, and then to festivals, and now they're saying women, right? They've launched this brand called Mohe, which I think Anushka Sharma is modeling. Yeah. Right. And interestingly, they've got money. They've got funding, and now they can actually go national with all their big plans. They can create just as, though in the women designer wear, there is already a Biba, right? Which is a fairly successful Indian brand, right? In and so Mohe will go probably one step above Biba. Biba is again a very successful brand. They'll go one step above Biba. Manyavar doesn't really have any major competition as of now. I'm just wondering if Jade Blue may come up, but you know, you never know. So they've hit all the right buttons, and they've done all the right things, right? Having their own exclusive outlets, investing consistently in advertising, and let's be clear, Indian businessmen are fascinated with Bollywood, right? And Indian businessmen somehow believe that using celebrities is a shortcut to brand recognition. And maybe that's also true, that you know, Raymond doesn't need a celebrity, but Manyavar needs a celebrity, at least needed a celebrity then. Maybe they'll continue, and you know, they may have done deals with these celebrities, and you know, because there's no other, you know, celebrities go by product category, right?
Correct.
Like, for example, if you take Ranveer Singh, there will be 20 brands of shampoo wanting to catch him, or 5 brands of shoes wanting to catch him. But Indian ethnic wear, there's only one, right?
So banking, Ranveer's on banking with Kotak, man. I mean, that was such a super bad. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah. So they've gone and done this nice cherry picking. They picked Virat, they picked, you know, Ranveer. They've done all the right kind of celebrities, and it has seems to have worked very well for them. Now, where do they go from here? Will they now try and downscale, you know, go after the Fab India market, which is a daily wear, kurtas and stuff like that? Or will they go up market, go further up into premium? Left to be seen. So it'll be interesting, and what Raymond does to Manyavar, and what Manyavar does to the market. So
yeah,
it's going to be a fascinating journey onwards.
And we're going to watch out for that, folks. Who knows? You know, maybe after a couple of years, we might come back and do one more episode on Raymond versus Manyavar, Manyavar versus Raymond, because this is a really interesting battle that continues till the day.
We hope you enjoyed our shopping episode on The Last Brand Standing, presented by Bank of Baroda. Stay tuned as we will take you on a fun ride on our next and last episode, where we are talking Hero Honda and Bajaj Auto. Don't forget to tune in. And if you like this podcast, you can check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. Also, you can follow me, Anupam Gupta, B50 on Twitter.
And me, Ambi Parmeshwaran, on Twitter @AbhiMGP.
That's a goodbye, folks. See you guys next time.